ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 9, titled The Passing Away of Bhishma Dev, text number 46. Tasya Nirhara Nadini Samparedasya Bhargava Yudhishthira Karayitva Muhurtha Dukhito Bhavat Tasya Nirharanadini Samparedasya Bhargava Yudhishthira Karayitva Muhurtam Dukhito Bhavat Tasya Nirharanadini Samparedasya Bhargava Yudhishthira Karayitva Muhurtam Dukhito Bhavat Word to word translation Tasya His Nirharana Adini Funeral Ceremony Samparetasya of the dead body Bhargava O descendant of Bhrigu Yudhishthiraha Maharaj Yudhishthir Karayitva having performed it Muhurtam for a moment Dukhitaha sorry Abhavat became. Translation. O descendant of Bhrigu, Shavanaka, after performing funeral rituals for the dead body of Bhishma Dev, Maharaj Yudhishthir was momentarily overtaken with grief. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Bhishma Dev was not only a great family head of Maharaj Yudhishthir, but also he was a great philosopher and friend to him, his brothers and his mother. Since Maharaj Pandu, the father of the five brothers headed by Maharaj Yudhishthir, had died, Bhishma Dev was the most affectionate grandfather of the Pandavas and caretaker of the widowed daughter-in-law Kunti Devi. Although Maharaj Dhritarashtra, the elder uncle of Maharaj Yudhishthir, was there to look after them, his affection was more on the side of his hundred sons, headed by Duryodhan. Ultimately, a colossal clique was fabricated to deprive the five fatherless brothers of the rightful claim of the kingdom of Hastinapur. There was great intrigue common in imperial palaces, and the five brothers were exiled to the wilderness. But Bhishma Dev was always a sincerely sympathetic well-wisher, grandfather, friend and philosopher to Maharaj Yudhishthir, even up to the last moment of his life. He died very happily by seeing Maharaj Yudhishthir to the throne, otherwise he would have long ago quitted his material body, instead of suffering agony over the undue suffering of the Pandavas. He was simply waiting for the opportune moment because he was sure and certain that the sons of Pandu would come out victorious in the battlefield of Kurukshetra, as his lordship Sri Krishna was their protector. As a devotee of the Lord, he knew that the Lord's devotees cannot be vanquished at any time. Maharaj Yudhishthir was quite aware of all these good wishes of Bhishma Dev, and therefore he must have been feeling the great separation. He was sorry for the separation of a great soul and not for the material body which Bhishmadev relinquished. The funeral ceremony was a necessary duty, although Bhishmadev was a liberated soul. Since Bhishmadev was without issue, the eldest grandson, namely Maharaj Yudhishthir, was the rightful person to perform this ceremony. It was a great boon to Bhishmadev that an equally great son of the family undertook the last rites of a great man. Om Gyan Timranthasya Gyananjana Shalakhaya Chakshur Unmiritam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yutha Padakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajadam Sahaganarakunathanitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parichana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahaganadalita Shri Vikshakhanitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dinabandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanjana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Prishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpadarubhyascha Kripasindhubhyascha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare 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 Krishna. In this verse, we can see that Maharaj Yudhishthir is demonstrating some qualities of a devotee. He is a pure devotee and he is manifesting great deal of separation from Bhishmadev. So when we speak about qualities, there is always misconception. And this misconception is primarily from the side of Mayavadis, impersonalists. So when they talk about a spiritualist, or when they talk about the supreme absolute truth to their understanding, they try to eliminate qualities. So usually they understand that the absolute is Brahman. Brahman means, the literal meaning of Brahman is something which is the greatest. So that is Brahman. So when they speak about Brahman, they always say Brahman is Nirguna. They say Nirguna Brahman. So this is the way they present Brahman, the absolute, according to their understanding. And if we ask about Brahman realization, these Mayavadis, impersonalists, they give all kinds of speculative answers. Even I had my personal experience asking, what is this Brahman realization? Can you explain to me? So one of the practitioners, I was a teenager and I was somehow or other trying to understand what is the absolute. So I came upon this Brahman. I understood according to Vedas, Brahman is the absolute. That was the conclusion I arrived at and asked this practitioner, what is Brahman? Can you explain? So he gave a kind of explanation which was highly speculative. It is very difficult to, even very difficult to understand, explain, or the person who was actually explaining, he didn't know exactly what it is. In fact, there was a very famous Mayavadi yogi. Many of the people in the path of spiritual understanding, they might have read his book, Yogananda. He has written a very famous book, Autobiography of a Yogi. So I happened to read that. You know, I was looking for something, so happened to read that. And in that, he claims that he was Brahman realized, and he gives the experience of realization of Brahman. So he writes a poem explaining how was his realization of Brahman. And the conclusion was nothing but he is all-knowing. Or this realization means he is aware of everything in this universe. That's what he was presenting in that poem. So absolutely it doesn't make any sense. How is it possible that he knows everything in this world? Means everything within each and every atom. Whatever is in this universe, how many unlimited universes are there, in all the universes, whatever is there, he must know if he is all-knowing, all-cognizant. We can speak only about Krishna. Janmadhyasyataha Anyved Itaratas Chasteshu Abhijnasara. He is Abhijna, Anyved and Itarata. Directly and indirectly, he is aware of everything. Whereas, when such Mayavadi is present, their realization, it is simply speculation. It has not even a grain of truth to it. And some of these Mayavadis, their practice is that since they say they are God, when they go in front of a deity, they don't pay obeisances. They understand, we are one with the Supreme Lord, we are one with the deities. So we don't have to pay obeisances. This is their practice. Even this particular Mayavadi, he himself writes in his autobiography the same thing. He went in front of a deity and he didn't pay obeisances. He writes it proudly, because I am realized, so I don't have to pay obeisances. So this is nonsense according to Vaishnava understanding, because there is always difference between Anu, who is minute, and Vibhu, who is the Supreme Lord. And that difference will be there always, and no one can actually remove that difference. It will be there. Now, why such misconception? So Srila Prabhupada explains, because the Mayavadis, they are afraid of material form and material qualities, because that is causing suffering and bondage. So according to them, they need something which is devoid of these qualities, so that is really spiritual, and that will not cause suffering, and they want to become one with that thing. So they call it Brahman. Now, if we bring the same concept to the spiritualists, in our case, we are devotees. However, the impersonalists, they are not devotees, but they are spiritualists. They are trying to practice some spiritual process. So when we bring the concept of quality in them, they even deny quality in themselves. So they want to be always kind of a neutral position, you know, Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. That is the one most common, most popular term in spiritual circles is Shanti, want to be peaceful. I mean, a kind of neutrality that is expected. The expected result of spirituality is one has to be in Shanti, in peace. Because there is so much of suffering in this material world, because of people, because of one's own mind and senses, in so many different ways. So they want to relinquish completely their qualities so that they can be peaceful. And according to them, no one can exhibit anger whatsoever. So the Mayavadi Swami is there, they cannot exhibit anger, but sometimes they lose their temper. That's the reality. One time, I was with my dad, and we went to our family friend. He was an Ayurvedic doctor, so he's my doctor. So if I have some problem, I call him and ask him. So he's back in India. So I went to him. So he was quite into spirituality, and he was explaining, you know, he was quite impressed to see me. He was quite happy to see me in this way, you know, as a devotee, you know, wearing saffron. He was quite happy with that. So he was explaining, we had, you know, such and such Swami, he was his friend. He took sannyas, he went to Himalayas, and he was meditating throughout in a cave. So not much of association of anyone. He is primarily focused on meditation and chanting of pranava, of omkar. So obviously he's a Mayavad, he's from Mayavad school, impersonalist school, he's not a devotee. And throughout his life, he was explaining his life to me, and then he was mentioning his contribution. One important contribution was that he constructed one school for the uneducated children, you know, in the village, you know, the Himalaya area, you know, there are children roaming around. For them, he constructed one school. So he was telling that is one of the very most important contribution of the Swami. So now, if we consider that an impersonalist, they are denying these qualities, then why do they manifest material qualities? And why do they act upon these material qualities? For example, this is a kind of compassion for those who are uneducated. We are not against that. Even ISKCON has school. We give normal material education as well as Krishna conscious education. But at the same time, if one is completely beyond material qualities, and if one doesn't have any qualities according to their understanding, then why do they manifest compassion? So Srila Prabhupada very clearly mentions that even those who are Brahman realized, when they fall down, they get into philanthropic activities because they have this strong tendency to relate to others, to experience the relation. So they are forced to act in this way. So according to Vaishnavas, the understanding is completely different. It is just like day and night. There is a far difference between the understanding of the impersonalist and devotees of the Lord. So when we talk about the Supreme Lord Himself, He manifests all good spiritual qualities. So in Srimad Bhagavatam, there is a beautiful verse in the 10th canto, 14th chapter. So this is a verse from the prayers of Lord Brahma. So this verse is focusing on the qualities of Krishna Himself. Because Lord Brahma is right in front of Lord Krishna after Brahma Vimohana Leela, and Brahma is chanting this verse. He is telling, Gunatmanaste Gunan Vimatum Hitavatirnasya Ka Isha Esya Kaleha Yeva Vimuta Sukalpe Bhu Pamshava Khe Mihka Du Bhasa. So the first point is Brahma is addressing the Lord as Gunatma. That's the first point. Gunatma. Gunatma means one who is the reservoir of all spiritual qualities. So how can the Supreme Absolute Truth, who is Krishna Himself, possess all good qualities? He is the reservoir of all the good qualities. So it's explained, or in this verse it's mentioned that the Lord has so many good qualities that no one can count. So Prabhupada writes, even a scientist could count all the atoms in all the universes, all the stars, everywhere, but it is impossible still to count the number of qualities of the Supreme Lord. Just like Ananda Dev is constantly glorifying Krishna's qualities all the time, still he is not coming to an end of it. So these are the number of qualities Krishna has, unlimited. Now, why he has such qualities? So one explanation is that he has such qualities. He comes to the material world and he manifests these good qualities so that we get attracted to these good qualities of Krishna and we develop some desire to go and associate with Krishna. So this is one reason he is manifesting all good qualities. Second reason is that all the living entities are attracted to Krishna in a certain way. So there are unlimited living entities and Krishna has unlimited good qualities. So a particular living entity has attraction for one particular quality of Krishna. So these qualities are used to attract the living entities. So of course this is compassion. This is reciprocation of the Supreme Lord. And apart from that, it also shows that Lord is a person. Quality implies a personality. Especially if you speak about compassion, heroism, generosity. If you take all these qualities, can we attribute this quality to something which is dead? Can you say this stone is very compassionate? Doesn't make any sense. Can you say this stone is generous? Doesn't make any sense. So, this quality implies that the Lord is a personality. He has personality. So, when we say Gunatma, it has lot many implications. And here we can see the Lord is manifesting compassion unto Bhishma Dev. So compassion is defined in Nectar of Devotion. It is meant that a person who is unable to bear another's distress is called compassionate. So here is an example where Lord Krishna is showing compassion to Bhishma Dev, because Bhishma Dev wanted to see Lord Krishna. Ultimately, he wanted to depart his body in presence of Lord Krishna. And at the right point, the Lord manifested himself in front of Bhishma Dev. And seeing Bhishma Dev in this condition, Lord felt so much of sorrow. He was so sad, and it was mentioned that the tears were flowing from the eyes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. And he was so much overwhelmed that he even forgot about himself. So can we see the manifestation of qualities of Krishna? He is so compassionate about his devotee, and he was present right in front of Bhishma Dev, and seeing his condition, tears were flowing from his eyes. So this is Krishna. Krishna has qualities and he is very compassionate. Now, just speaking a point regarding Bhishma Dev, we were discussing about Bhishma Dev for few Bhagavatam classes. So Bhishma Dev, even though it is mentioned that in this pastime where Bhishma Dev was fighting with the Lord, he was in the rasa of chivalry. So he was exchanging chivalry rasa with the Lord. And it is an eternal rasa. At the same time, we have to understand that the relation between Bhishma and the Lord is in dasya. The primary relation is in servitude, even though there is manifestation of chivalry. Because the primary rasa has to be, you know, the relationship basically has to be among the one of the four rasas. So it is in servitude. And the destination is Vaikuntha planet, because Bhishma Dev was worshipping in awe and reverence. So this is the destination of Bhishma Dev. Now, since the Lord has such a compassionate nature, and this compassionate nature is manifested primarily through Srimati Radharani. So devotees, we take shelter of Srimati Radharani. So here worship is not just Krishna, it is Radha and Krishna. So that is the significant point of our Sampradaya. That is, even though we are coming from the Madhva Sampradaya, in the Madhva Sampradaya as such, there is no Radha Krishna worship. So when we come through the line of Madhva Gaudiya, then the worship of Radha and Krishna, that is the highest worship, is introduced. So even while chanting Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, half the time we are chanting Radharani's name. So we are really taking shelter of compassionate nature of Krishna, that is Srimati Radharani. So it is mentioned, Mahatmanastu Maham Partha Devim Prakritim Ashritaha. So the great devotees, the characteristics of great devotees, that they are taken shelter of Devim Prakriti, and that Devim Prakriti is Srimati Radharani. Now in Chaitanya Charitamrita, there is further explanation on qualities of Krishna. It is mentioned that Bhrityasya Pashyati Guru Napi Naparatha Seva Manakapi Kritam Bhuta Kupayati Avishkaroti Pishneshapi Naphyasuya Chilena Nirmalamati Purushottamaya. So this verse is elaborating the qualities of Krishna. So it is mentioned, Krishna, who is known as Purushottam, is the greatest person. He has a pure mind. And he is so gentle that even though his devotees are implicated by committing greatest of the offenses, he considers it as insignificant. Then it is mentioned that seva manakapi krita bahudha pipayati. That is, even though we do a little bit of service, manak means a tiny fraction. Even though we do a little bit of service, Krishna considers it as great. He says bahudha pipayati. And it is mentioned also that avishkaroti pishuneshapi na abhisuya. That is, even though someone is envious to Krishna, still he doesn't take it as an offense. So we can see practically all in the material world are envious of Krishna. Or this material world is for those who are envious to Krishna. Still the Lord is facilitating such that one can reform and go back to the spiritual abode. So where is the question of envy from the side of Krishna? So in fact, if we see about our service, even though we may or we are doing imperfectly many of the services, still the because of Lord's mercy, he is just tolerating, he's accepting that. So if you see why Radhavallabh is accepting all our service, because of the good qualities. That's all. So we have to see, we are seeing others in one way, at the same time the Lord is seeing everyone in a different way. We may try to find fault in others, and non-devotees constantly find fault in even Krishna himself, but think about the whole situation from the viewpoint of Krishna. Because of his good qualities, he never sees such a thing. He sees good in others. So these are some descriptions about qualities of Krishna. Now, think about qualities of devotees. So Bhagavatam says, only devotees have qualities, good qualities. So in the impersonalist circle, even though they want to deny the quality of a spiritualist, according to Vaishnavas, according to devotees of the Lord, Bhagavatam says only devotees have good qualities. It is said, it's very clear statement. There is, you know, harava bhaktasya kuto mahadgunam. Apaktasya, for a non-devotee, where is the good quality for a non-devotee? It can sound pretty harsh, but it is a reality, because even though someone could manifest some qualities, apparently good qualities, since it is not in connection with Krishna, it cannot bring any tangible result. Because still one has to suffer in the material world, and it becomes just like, even though someone wants to help someone else, it is just like blind following another blind. So it cannot give any ultimate result. So it is considered harava bhaktasya kuto mahadgunam, because they are on the mental platform. So mind says, okay, this is good, so they will do something good. So give some donation to Red Cross, do this, do that, and after that, nothing. Then later, whatever implications comes out of their charitable work, they have to suffer. And if they engage others in that kind of welfare activities, which in turn would have some negative implications because of sinful activity, then all of them have to suffer. So where is the actual good quality? So the real good quality can only be manifested by devotees. So we don't deny the qualities of the Lord, nor of the devotees. So we can see qualities manifested by great devotees, like Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada never tried to be just, when it was required to be angry, Prabhupada became angry. You know, there is this famous story, somewhere in Europe, there was one yajna going on. The preparation for the yajna was going on, and nothing was improper. Nothing, you know, not the ingredients, not everyone was reading in the corner, the four books, and it was kind of a mess. And that yajna has been telecasted, a live telecast was going on, and Srila Prabhupada was chastising his disciples very heavily, and the whole thing was actually broadcasted. So it was mentioned, Prabhupada didn't care about it, was it broadcasted or not, but he understood this is actually the time to correct his disciples so that they know things properly. So he used anger in Krishna service. So this is a manifestation of anger in the right mood, and we don't deny that. And this is, of course, different from manifestation of material anger. Why anger comes in the material world? Because there is frustration. There is this unfulfilled desire leads to anger. So the center is one's own desires. Whereas anger of a pure devotee, the center is Krishna. So that is the main difference between even the manifestation of such qualities. And there are other instances also. One time the Vyas Puja's celebration was organized in Japan for Srila Prabhupada, and Prabhupada and his disciples flew from America to Japan on their way to India. And Prabhupada said the whole function was arranged, and Prabhupada actually asked Matadishu Swami or Tambakrishna Maharaj, and he asked, bring Pushpa. So when he heard Pushpa, the devotees, they didn't understand the Sanskrit exactly. They thought it is Pushpanna. So a particular kind of rice is known as Pushpanna. Anna means rice. Pushpanna means a particular kind of rice. So
they rushed into the kitchen and ordered, okay, now we had to cook rice. Prabhupada is asking for rice, bring the rice for the offering, you know, for the Vyasa Puja celebration. So it took some time because they had to boil the rice and they prepared rice. And Prabhupada was telling, you know, what's happening? Where is Pushpa? Where is Pushpa? So after a long delay, Pushpanna came. There is a bowl, a plate full of rice. And Prabhupada became furious. Prabhupada said, I asked you to bring flour, and if you don't understand what is, you know, Pushpa, you must ask and clarify and then bring what I asked for. Don't just speculate and bring rice. So Prabhupada said, this is not proper, this is not Vyasa Puja, Puja celebration, we cancel the program today. So Prabhupada said, cancel. So that day, Vyasa Puja celebration didn't happen, and Prabhupada said, okay, I'll tell you exactly what to do, and next day is the Vyasa Puja celebration, and the next day, the devotees did it properly. So you see how when Prabhupada used anger in Krishna service, it has a very positive effect. And now it is in Leelamrita, and we are all reading, and we are all getting benefit from that small incident. So this is where we can see it is very important that a devotee who is very senior, they have to actually show compassion in this way, that is correcting in the right mood. So it is mentioned that anger can be used in correction, of course, and also it can be used against non-devotees. But one has to be very careful. It is mentioned, examples are given about Hanuman. He fought in Lanka. And also we can see Arjuna. He fought against all the non-devotees and killed. So that is said, it is a very practical application. It doesn't mean we had to go and fight outside. We can preach vigorously, that we can do. It is said, Krotham Bhakta Dveshi Jane. That is, Krotham can be used against Bhakta Dveshi, who are against the devotees. If somebody is attacking devotees, we may have to use force. It had happened in New Vrindavan. New Vrindavan, when the dacoits were attacking New Vrindavan, Prabhupada sanctioned, we need to have Kshatriya devotees. So they were properly trained to fight. And they had the whole team staying awake all night to protect the devotees. So that has the application. And devotees like Yudhishthira Maharaj, he is demonstrating a very soft heart. He is feeling so much of compassion, he is feeling so much of separation for Bhishma Dev. He was feeling so much of compassion, he was feeling hurt when Bhishma Dev was lying in the bed of arrows, even though that was necessary for the fight. And now, at the time of separation from Bhishma Dev, Yudhishthira Maharaj, he is feeling very unhappy, he is feeling sad. And it is mentioned that one of the quality of a devotee is that their heart is very soft. So, one needs to be strict in individual sadhana, seva. One has to be very strict to oneself, but at the same time, one's relation to others has to be with a lot of affection. The basis of relation has to be affection. So it is mentioned, if we are just too strict in application, that is also a problem. That is, unnecessary austerities have to be avoided. But sadhana we have to be strict, and following regulative principles we have to be very strict. And the austerities we are performing, it has to be to nourish our devotion. This austerities shouldn't be to make our heart hard, because already our heart is quite hard. And now, if we do austerities in such a way that our heart becomes too much hard, then it is not at all favorable for our devotion service. So sometimes, if we do some austerities which are beyond our capacity, we have a tendency to look down upon other devotees. So for instance, if we try to get up, if we can't, and get up 2 o'clock, we read 2 hours, chant all the rounds before Mangalarati. One could do if one is qualified, there is no problem with that. It is recommended if one can. But if we are not qualified and if we try to do such kind of austerities, what happens? We tend to look down upon other devotees. We tend to say, I am good and they are not good. Look at my austerities. And these people, they are just enjoying their senses. Same with, you know, only cold shower in winter. Now it's a good time for cold shower if somebody want to show their power of hostility. It is winter, you know, 1 degree, 0 degree. Then if one just take cold shower, and if one can, it is fine. But it should nourish one's devotion, meaning it should facilitate one hearing, chanting, remembering and preaching. If it is facilitating, that is fine. And if it is not nourishing one's heart, then there is something wrong in that application. It is mentioned, austerities are recommended in Krishna consciousness. And one of the major austerity is preaching Krishna consciousness. So it is recommended, but one should know what one should actually do, what is favorable and what is not favorable. One time, it's a very nice pastime with Prabhupada's Sanskrit scholar Pradyumna Prabhu and Srila Prabhupada. So Pradyumna Prabhu wanted to read Hari Bhakti Vilas, because Hari Bhakti Vilas is one of the works of Srila Sanatana Goswami, which is very vast and it has so many rules and regulations. Practically it's a huge book. So he started reading Hari Bhakti Vilas, and Srila Prabhupada found out that Prabhu was reading Hari Bhakti Vilas. So Prabhupada said, don't read Hari Bhakti Vilas. If you read, you will fall down. That's what Prabhupada said. So Prabhu was he was quite attached to reading. So after some time he found again reading Hari Bhakti Vilas. Then Prabhupada said, no, I told you don't read Hari Bhakti Vilas at this stage. And Prabhupada explained why one will fall down if they read Hari Bhakti Vilas. He explained that if you read, there are so many rules and regulations, and you know it is impractical to do all these rules and regulations. It is impractical to implement in day-to-day life. Say for instance, even the deity worship, it's only a fraction of the rules and regulations given in Hari Bhakti Vilas. Only the major things, not everything. So one time Prabhupada said, if I give you all the rules and regulations from Hari Bhakti Vilas, one will faint. So he said, okay, if you see all these rules and regulations, you will try to find fault in others. It is nothing wrong in reading Hari Bhakti Vilas, but the problem is when we are immature and when we read all these books and we see all these rules and regulations and we try to see, okay, fault in others. Okay, he's doing all that, he's not doing right, or she's not doing right. So in that way, we try to find fault, and we would commit offense against devotees, and that would cause our fall down. So Prabhupada said, don't read at that point. It doesn't mean that devotees should never read. Okay, of course, for the deity worship purposes, senior devotees, they read and they take whatever instructions required. So that has the application. So the real softness of heart means that chanting is actually pure. That is the indication of real softness. Real good qualities of a devotee means the chanting is really pure. As we can see, the famous verse from the second canto of Bhagavatam. Tadashmasaram hridayam patetam yatsushyamane harinamadheer navikariye thayatavikaro netrejalam gatraruhe shuhasha. Certainly, that heart is steel framed, which in spite of one's chanting the holy name of the Lord with concentration does not change when ecstasy take place. Tears fill the eyes and the hairs stand on end. So we know from this verse, at least for me, you can see the heart is steel framed. It's not soft at all, it's pretty hard. And in the purport, the conclusion is given, even though we are trying to chant with lot of attention, we are trying our best in one sense to chant with concentration, still there is no transformation as such. The heart is not becoming so soft, tears are not flowing from the eyes, nor hair is standing on end. So the conclusion of this purport is that it is not happening in due course of time. If it is not happening, the reason is only that we are committing offenses against the holy name. So this is the conclusion. So Srila Jiva Goswami explains in Sandarbha, that's the conclusion. Even for a long period of time, if one chants with attention, still all these qualities are not manifesting, then it is only because of offenses. So one time I asked His Holiness Prahladananda Swami Maharaj, you know, how can I avoid all these offenses? Because we read every day, but you know, we are not really aware, or we are, you know, just leave it, you know, okay, there are offenses, okay. I'll try to chant attentively, okay, because that is the gateway to all the other offenses. So we are trying that, but generally, how can we avoid all the offenses? So Maharaj answered in a very simple way. He said, you first understand what are these offenses, really understand what are these offenses, and then see in one's application how you are committing these offenses, and then avoid that. So first point is, we have to be aware of what are the offenses. It's not just like, you know, number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, you know, the offenses are going, the lifting is going, and we are repeating, because when we repeat every day, it becomes just natural, it becomes mechanical. So understand and then apply. See where are we committing mistakes. So that was his advice, and I found it is very simple, straightforward, but it was very powerful. So even for a sadhaka, has to manifest at least to some degree some kind of softness in the heart, and there has to be some feeling in chanting. One has to chant in a prayerful mood. We must at least mean what we are chanting. Because Srila Prabhupada very nicely explains what is the meaning of Maha Mantra. O Hare, energy of the Lord. O Krishna, the Supreme Lord, kindly engage me in your loving devotional service. So at least we should mean what we are chanting. So, because many times we don't even understand the meaning, even though we have heard many times, but at least we should aspire for loving service unto Radha and Krishna. At least we had to bring that in the mind. So the chanting doesn't become just mechanical, just repetition. Rather, there is something in the heart as well. So ultimately, this kind of chanting should bring to bhava bhakti. Why I am making this point? Because one of the qualities, one of the symptoms, the secondary characteristics of bhava bhakti is softness of heart. So for a devotee in the stage of bhava, the devotional service in ecstasy, his heart is soft. Why? Because in that softness only the ecstasies can manifest. So that is the characteristics. And here we can see Yudhishthira Maharaj, of course, he is a pure devotee. So we shouldn't get confused when he manifests such good qualities, like he is feeling separation from Bhishma Dev. Because Bhishma Dev was his well-wisher, as is mentioned, well-wisher, philosopher, relative, and also he is a pure devotee. So it is natural that he would feel sorrow when a pure devotee departs. It is mentioned in the conversation between Ramananda Rai and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asks Ramananda Rai, what is the most painful thing in this world? Then Ramananda Rai answers that the most painful thing is separation from devotees. So here we can see Yudhishthira Maharaj, it is very natural for him to feel such a thing because he is a pure devotee. And second point here is, the funeral rite is performed for a liberated soul. So one could ask, why is it necessary to perform funeral rite for a liberated soul? Is it necessary? On one side, for a liberated soul, he is anyway going back to Godhead. So this kind of ritual is not necessary in one sense. So as far as taking that soul from this world to the spiritual world, this funeral ceremony is not required, because he is already liberated. Similarly, but at the same time, it is mentioned, Yudhishthira Maharaj is performing this as a matter of duty. As a matter of duty. So we can see, that is to set an example. We can also see the same point in terms of relatives. If we have our immediate relatives passed away, then do we have to actually, devotees have to perform this funeral duties? The answer is, if we consider helping them, Krishna always takes care of one's relatives. He takes care of a devotee and also his relatives whom he likes. Krishna actually takes care of them. So in that respect, it's not necessary. But on the other side, to set a social standard, to be an example for others, and also for preaching purpose, it is recommended. So even it is mentioned in defining pure devotional service, Anya Plashta Shunyam verse,
if one actually performs this kind of shraddha or funeral ceremonies, then it is okay to do so. But if one thinks that Krishna wouldn't help that soul without performing this, that's not correct. That's not correct. Krishna would help a relative, immediate relative of a devotee for sure, even if one doesn't perform the funeral rites. But to set an example, and for preaching for the wider public, we usually do such an activity. And here we can see even Yudhishthira Maharaj perform it just as a matter of duty. And on a practical basis, since there is glorification of the Supreme Lord in such kind of a rite, it is a purificatory process, so there is no harm doing so. So one who is actually doing this rite, they get purified, because again Krishna is in the center. So in conclusion, we saw that how the impersonalists deny the qualities in themselves as well as in the Supreme Absolute Truth, whereas in the Vaishnava understanding, we accept the qualities of the Supreme Lord and we say there are unlimited qualities of the Supreme Lord, and devotees, they also manifest qualities, and that is spiritual in nature. And then finally, we saw how Yudhishthira Maharaj is manifesting this quality as a devotee, and he is performing these funeral rites to set an example out of duty. So I stop here and see if there are any questions or comments. Yes, Prabhu.
Prabhu, you were saying Krishna knows everything directly and indirectly.
Yeah.
Can you please explain how he knows indirectly?
Oh, indirectly. Directly, generally it's mentioned, indirect one, if you're asking, he has his agents everywhere. And who are his agents? Demigods. Okay. And specific demigods are there who are kind of witness, who are actually seeing what's going on in one's daily life, each and every moment. So that is the indirect how Krishna knows everything indirectly through his agents. That is one means. Then of course he can know everything directly as well. I think this demigod point is mentioned in that purport to 1.1.1.
Yeah. Are demigods liberated souls?
Generally, demigods are not liberated souls, because they are accepting that position because they have a strong tendency to control. So Krishna, they are devotees because they have this tendency to control. So they are given a position where they can control. So the demigod means they are controllers of different material energies, different material manifestations.
Does it mean they have fallen down?
Yeah, of course. They are not in the spiritual world.
So it's not because when they are acting on, because it's an order of Krishna.
They are acting in order of Krishna because they are great devotees, but doesn't mean they are pure devotees. They are great devotees. They are of course greater than us. They are undertaking the order of Krishna. Say for instance, generally, Brahma is the greatest of the demigods. If we consider the position of Brahma in a particular universe, he is doing the secondary creation to fulfill the mission of Krishna. So he is acting according to the guidance of Krishna, and he is directly getting instruction from Krishna, because Tene Brahma Hridaya Adikave, Krishna imparts the knowledge unto the heart of Brahma. So in that way they are acting, but that not necessarily means that they are pure devotees.
Yeah? As it's like has been mentioned that the first creation we had was the first time we entered into this material world was the fall down, and yeah, we entered as a Brahma. Right. So does it mean that Brahma is not realized? That he fall down, and then he's it's been mentioned by one of the Maharajas that our firstborn is as a Brahma, and then we fall down and fall down.
One, one, one can fall down from the position of Brahma. One can fall down further down from the position of Brahma. There is no problem in that. It's not recommended. One must, you know, one should go back to the spiritual abode, but there is chances, there are chances of falling down.
You told so many things about impersonalists and Mayavadis. Now, what I understand, impersonalists are those who don't believe in the form of the heart. And also they don't want to start with him. That's another reason they don't want to. And Mayavadis are offensive because they think themselves are God. So what are the differences you want to summarize between these two?
I think you have summarized nicely.
What I just said, you told me, and what you told so many details.
Primarily, the difference between Brahmavadi and Mayavadi is that Mayavadi deny the form of Krishna, so they deny Krishna. In other words, they want to kill Krishna. They don't accept. They say Krishna has a material body. As simple as that. They say Krishna has a material body. When we speak to Mayavadis, they say at the end they will say Krishna has a material body, and all the activities of Krishna are material. So they maybe it is of material goodness. I had this experience speaking after speaking everything. They say this is what it is. All Vrindavan pastimes are material. Just like devatas, you know, having enjoyment in the heavenly abode is a kind of the same thing is happening in this Vrindavan. That's their understanding. So it is heavily offensive to see the body of Krishna as material. So that is Mayavada. Whereas Brahmavada, they don't deny the form of the Lord as such, but they don't have attraction for that. So they are fixed onto impersonal Brahman. So they don't offend the Supreme Lord. So that's the difference.
That means they are not better than Mayavadis.
Yeah, they are better.
They can become devotees later on, then they come in front of devotees.
Yeah, that both can become devotees. Both Mayavadis and Brahmavadis both can become devotees by the strength of association of devotees.
Difficult to make Mayavadi devotees.
Yeah, that is correct.
The most offensive.
Yeah, that's correct.
Really, last question. You said you should not preach. We should preach to other people. The thing is like,
what is that?
Like we normally go and preach to non-devotees.
Yeah.
Many times.
Yeah.
And also heard that you should not reveal your heart to non-devotees. So how can we, you know, I cannot clarify that myself, you know.
Did I tell me now? Okay, anyway, that's fine. Yeah. Keep going. Yeah. That's a good point.
Yeah, I wanted to find out, like, if someone is non-devotees, and if we really want to preach, then we have to open our heart, right? If we want to preach Krishna consciousness.
Okay, there is a difference between these two. That is, preaching, what are we preaching? We are preaching philosophy of Krishna consciousness, correct? And revealing the heart means something different. Revealing the heart means, we are ready to, or we are open to accept values of non-devotees. That is the meaning of revealing the heart. Means you are taking personal guidance. Why are we telling our, say, what, revealing means something which is secret, which publicly say, that's right. We don't just go to anyone and say. So if you take our, say for instance, if you tell our problems, okay, I'm facing such and such difficulties in Krishna consciousness. If you go and tell a Mayavadi or even a non-devotee, what will happen? We are actually opening up ourselves. It's not just we are telling something or revealing something to them, rather we are open to accept their instructions also. If we are really opening our heart to someone, means it implies that we are ready to accept their values, their instructions. So
if we do so with a non-devotee, whatever advice they give would be naturally material, and that is going to degrade our consciousness. So actually, if we are honestly revealing our heart to someone, means knowingly or unknowingly, we are ready to accept their values. So that is revealing the heart. Where, so the same principle when we use in Krishna service, when we reveal our heart, our problems to devotees, then that will help, because they will help, you know, they will give an instruction which is spiritual that will cause our further advancement. So one is degrading, one is advancing. So huge difference. So one has to be very careful. Whereas preaching means we are preaching Krishna consciousness, we are preaching the philosophy. So you know, there is no problem. These are two different things. Any further questions? Thank you very much. Grantha Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Gaur Premande.